Lichtner Ondrej.
My name's Andrei Lichtner, and I'm a PhD student here at Brno University of Technology. My supervisor is Professor Schweda. And today I've prepared a presentation about formal specifications of software-defined networks. My presentation is divided into several parts. First of all, I'll introduce software-defined networks, how they compare to currently used networks and why we want to use or why we are interested in software-defined networks. Then I'll give an overview of how people are trying to formally specify software-defined networks, what tools they're using, and give an example. Then I'll finish up with talking about future possibilities of how networks could move and how other approaches to formal specifications are being done or tried. Then I'll summarize what I've talked about and leave some time for questions at the end. So before talking about software-defined networks, we first need to take a look at conventionally used networks that we use today. These networks are based on the TCP/IP model or the ISO OSI, as we all know. These have been designed years ago, and they've been in use a long time. They can be characterized by saying that they're static. The topology and the configuration doesn't change much. If it does change, it requires a lot of changes. They impose a strict hierarchy of tiers of switches and routers that create tree structures that are, again, static, don't change a lot. And the design was centered around client-server computing model. So there was always, the communication is always point-to-point, and not much else happens in the networks. So past few years, we've been noticing changes in networking. These can be just summarized into changes in traffic patterns. So what that means is that the previously defined client-server model is changing and isn't as strictly defined as it was before. The client and the server are still in there, but usually they're not the only two parties that are participating in the communication. There are often times when the client sends a request to the server, the server ends up talking to other entities, other servers, content databases, and other stuff, which means that this fundamentally changes the traffic that happened in the network. There's no longer just two points. There are multiple points, and the traffic happens on different places, different routes, and similar stuff. So this is partially connected to server virtualization, which means that we are running virtual servers or instead of physical servers. So previously we had one server, one machine. Now we can have one physical machine, but different virtual machines running on the same, which changes the communication between them. And also you can have a virtual server that runs on multiple physical machines. Again, these need to communicate between each other, and that introduces some more complexities into the communications. Also, the past 5 years or so, there has been a very big explosion of mobile devices and more content consuming by end users. So pretty much everyone has a mobile device now, and they're connected to the network almost all the time, consuming data from anywhere they are. The point here is that people are moving, which means that they're on different places in the network at different times. This is the in direct contrast to the static nature of the networks and their topology. They're moving around, so the network needs to adapt, and it wasn't designed for that. And to throw in some buzzwords, you've all definitely heard of the cloud services and big data. These are, again, related to changes in traffic patterns, but this time it's more related to communication between the servers, as in there is not that much communication to the client, but there is a lot of processing and communication between the servers and clouds. Depends on how you look at it. So the limitations that we are facing is that the current networks, they've been designed, each part was designed as isolated from the others, and was designed to solve a specific problem in a specific way, which means that by the time that we get here, a lot of years has passed, a lot of solutions, a lot of complexity. This complexity is getting worse and worse, and changing anything in the networks is getting very hard, which means that scalability is getting worse. And building bigger networks or changing topologies in networks, or even dynamic changing in topologies, as I've said, people moving around with mobile devices, is getting really hard. And the management of the network would get pretty much impossible in the future. This is the current prognosis for the future. The current networks won't handle it. Maybe somebody will invent something that will fix it, but it's always just a temporary solution. And as I've mentioned, management of the network. So administrators, right now, configuration of the network means that you configure each device separately. They're all separate entities. It could be different vendors, could be different software, could be different devices. You have to configure them each separately. And getting bigger networks means just more work, more knowledge needed by the administrator, and so on. So what are software-defined networks and how do they solve this? So software-defined networking is an emerging network architecture where network control is decoupled from forwarding and is directly programmable. This can be very easily described by the picture you see here. There are three basic layers. On the lowest layer, there is the infrastructure layer. You have network devices. That's the physical devices that you all know. But a little bit different, they don't implement any logic. They're really stupid. They don't do anything. They just follow instructions that they're given. Then on top of that, there's the control layer. The network devices, when they don't know what to do, they ask the control layer, and he gives them the instructions. The control layer implements all the logic that we are used to today. So routing or switching or implementing policies, firewalls, and other such stuff. And on the highest layer, there's the application layer, where you can have business applications that gives you easier management, gives you information about the status of the network, what's happening, what's disconnected, how much data is flowing where, and similar stuff. So the benefits to the current networks are basically these. The management is now centralized. So the administrator needs to just work with one point of contact to the network and configure everything from there. The networks, since they are programmable, so the administrator can set the configuration into the control layer, and the control layer is programmed. So it can figure out stuff for it on its own, and therefore can dynamically change the topology or the configuration of the network devices underneath it. So this simplifies management. That's pretty important. It also simplifies devices. As I've said, the physical devices are really stupid. They don't have to do anything. And least, but most important, of the vendor dependence is going to be slowly but surely removed, because the administrator, again, just works with the management application on top of it. The communication with the specific devices is handled on a lower layer. We don't have to deal with it. So SDNs are pretty interesting for us. Now, the next part deals with formal specifications. So first of all, why do we want it? Software-defined networks are very new, and they're designed, and of course, since they're new, they haven't actually been used in practice too much. They're unproven, and they're designed to support rapid changes, development of new applications and stuff. So this can mean that a lot of new stuff can happen in a very short time, and this can introduce a lot of new problems, a lot of new bugs, and other stuff. So the best. So since we don't really want to deploy anything new that breaks our whole network, we want to first test it and verify it, analyze it, what will happen. So for that, we have verification and analysis, and we might want to use formal methods to do that. So they are very useful for that. There are automated verification tools. So this is the one way of doing it. So on the next few slides, I'll be talking about these two most commonly used tools for formally specified or most commonly mentioned tools for formal specification of software-defined networks. The first one is specification and description language, short SDL, and the second one is Algebra of Communicating Shared Resources, or ACSR. So, specification and description language is an object-oriented formal language, and it's used for specification of complex, event-driven, real-time, and interactive application. So we can already see that this would be something we would be interested in when we are trying to formally specify networks, since this is pretty much what's happening in them. So the theoretical model SDL consists of a set of extended finite state machines, then run in parallel, and they communicate with discrete signals. So, compared to network, this could mean that finite state machine is a switch or a router, and discrete signals are packets that are sent between them. So here's the problem with SDL, is that this is what it's composed of. SDL is loosely comparable to UML and other such languages that use for graphic representation. They can, of course, be used in text-based form and more math-like form. But the components are... It has a lot of components. You have system structures and structural components, or system block processes, procedure hierarchies. Then you have communication, behavior, data types, and since it's object-oriented, you also have inheritance. So the common consensus right now between researchers is that SDL is way overkill for software-defined networking, and could be, of course, used, but nobody has the time for that. So instead, most people use the algebra of communicating shared resources. So it's a formal specification and it's used for formal specification and manipulation of distributed systems with resources and real-time constraints. This seems pretty similar to SDL. However, the main difference is that it is only composed of timed actions and instantaneous events. These are the main two components, and there's not that much complexity as in SDL. So we'll talk a little about these two parts. So timed actions. This is the theory around that. So you have a finite set of reusable resources, RES. So you denote, you use small lowercase letters as R and V and such for denoting each individual element. And then you have resource-consuming actions, denoted as large capital letters A, B, C, for example. The resource-consuming actions can be described as pairs of the set of resources used by the action and the complete function, the pi, R, that maps the resource to a real positive number that denotes the probability of the resource being used by the action. So when we write down the actions, we use a set of pairs written like that. And since it's timed actions, we also need to define the time domain, which is real positive numbers, including infinity. Which means if something is happening for a zero amount of time, it means that it's not happening. And if it's happening for infinite amount of time, it's it will not finish. So it's probably somewhere stuck in the cycle. And we use lowercase letters u, v, w to denote time values. So when you write a with an uppercase u, it denotes that the action is executing for the duration of u time units. And we define two operations on actions. So the first one is synchronous composition. By doing that, you create a new action. You write it like A and the vertical line and B, and it's a single new action that executes simultaneously A and B. The restriction here is that there isn't a resource that is used by both of these, and that both of these actions execute for the same amount of time. And the second operation is closure, written in brackets with a U. The U is a set, which the operation means that you increase the used resources by the action to include everything in the set of U. This doesn't change anything about the action. It doesn't change any of the probabilities or what the action does. But it reserves the resources so that other actions cannot use them. So this can be useful sometimes. Well, next, we have instantaneous events. So these are a synchronization mechanism. And we denote them with, again, lowercase letters, for example, E. Each event has two parts. First is the label, L, E. And the priority of the event, which is pi e. The labels are drawn from the set. I don't know how to read that letter, but it's the union of L and tau. So, and where we assume that there is a complement operation over the elements of L, and tau denotes internal actions. So since it's a synchronization mechanism, it's always pairwise. You synchronize two actions. So we define a composition operation over two events. It's written, again, with a vertical line. And it's only defined when both of the events have complementary labels. So when you can look at it as a signal that you throw, and the other part catches it. So you have the event that generates the signal, and you have an event that catches the signal and does something else with it. So that's the complement part. Now, and the last important part about the algebra is the computation model that is used. So the behavior of a process is given by a labeled transition system that can be that is a subset of process, action, and the process. And this means that the process P executes action alpha and turns into process P with a dash. If and only if this transition is in the label transition system, so if it's defined. So we call this the execution step, and we write it as a P arrow with an alpha on top of it and P with a dash. And to create different processes, we have a grammar that is described here. So the zero means that there is no action required. This one means that you execute an action A for U time units, and then follow it up with B. This means almost the same thing, but you execute the event, which is instantaneous, so it doesn't take any time. This means this is the non-deterministic execution of either one of those processes. This is the parallel execution of both of them at the same time. This means that the process P is executed for V amounts of units, after which it is interrupted and followed by process Q. This is almost the same thing, but the process P can be interrupted at any point in time. This usually means that there is, for example, a synchronization event happening on the process Q, and it triggers, so the previous process gets terminated and Q continues. And then you have the closure, which reserves the resources, as was mentioned before. And this is the restriction operator, which means that there cannot be any other process. So F is a set that contains, and that is a subset of the set of events. So that means that when process P is executing, there cannot be any other process that uses events that are in the set of F. So that's the reservation of events, kind of. And the last two are the recursion, which allows us to create a longer and infinite amount of behaviors as we want. So how is this used? I'll show an example of how the algebra is used to specify an SDN network. The important parts are that network nodes are represented by processes. Packet forwarding is specified as event sending and receiving. And packet matching with rules are represented by synchronization between input and output events. So this is what it looks like. On the right side, you have the topology of the software-defined network that we are describing. So you can see that there's the controller that's in the control layer. Then there's the switch. It's the only member of the network layer or the architecture layer. So it's the non-intelligent switch that doesn't know what to do, and when it should do something, it asks the controller or tells him. And then you have three hosts that use the network. So the entire system can be described as a process where you're executing host 1, host 2, host 3, and switch and the controller at the same time, and nobody else is using their events. The switch is running the active rules. There's probably a mistake in the rule 3. And when it doesn't know what to do, it's running the process of requester. So when it doesn't know, it asks the controller. Then you have hosts. These are described by what packets they are sending and in what order. So that is described in the table on the right lower side. So the network is modeled that we are expecting these kinds of traffic to be happening. So the hosts are the generators of traffic, so that the model actually is moving or doing something. And as you can see, the requester is defining behavior. That means that if I get packet 1 and don't know what to do with it, I fire the event request rule for packet 1. This rule is sketched by the controller, right here. And he reacts by activating rule 1, which is by firing the event for activating rule 1. So that's in inactive rule 1. So this gets fired, and that fires the active rule 1. Active rule 1 can be seen in the... where is it? So, active rule 1 just resends the packets. So that executes the actual forwarding of the packets. The other rules are the same, and the denotation of the complements of the events is seen by this. So when there's an active rule, then there's the active rule with a dash before it, so that's the complement by which you can see what is corresponding to what. So this is a pretty simple network, and as you can see, the formal specification is already getting big, so it might not be the best course of action, but it's what we have right now. So other approaches that were not mentioned here, mostly because of time constraints, are the Z notation. This could be used when it's focused on each switch and controller, but there are problems with describing larger networks where it would be pretty much impossible. Then there are timed automata which are basically extended finite state machines, where the transition rules are controlled by time intervals. And a novel approach is formally verifiable networking. This was proposed a few years ago, so, and it's still really new, so, and it wasn't practically used in anything. So I skipped that before because there wasn't really much data on that. But it, if it gets finished and actually used, it could be interesting because it, as it's written there, it unifies all the parts that are important for formally specifying and then creating new standards for software-defined networks and such stuff. So the future of networks is looking interesting, definitely. SDNs are still very new, so their usefulness is quite questionable. As I mentioned, they were practically used only just in lab environments, and there are the real results that we can expect from them aren't where we want them to be yet, to summarize it. But they've been seeing a rise in popularity in the past couple of years. The concept isn't that new. I mean, it was proposed more than 10 years ago, but the progress, the work on it has been done more recently. And this rise in popularity could continue, which would probably mean that, at least I hope that it would mean that formal verification in the area of networks could get more interesting and more developed as it currently is. There is also this isn't directly what I'm working on here. I'm working on a completely different architecture, so that's also a possibility. That's called RINA. It's the recursive internetwork architecture, and that completely throws away everything we know about networks. So completely redoes them. So to summarize the presentation, at the start I talked about what current networks look like and what are their problems, what we're facing. Then I mentioned something about software-defined networks, why we want them, how they're interesting. And then after which I talked about formal specifications of these software-defined networks and gave an example in the algebra of communicating shared resources and mentioned some other approaches and what the future holds for us. So these are the sources, and that's all from me. So if you have any questions, I'll try to answer.
Any questions, please? Before you ask, in my view, I don't have a question, but I've got a comment, positive comment, because this was a very good presentation. He always had just main points, move, for example, to 20, 21, to page 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, short, 5 statements, and now he keeps talking and explaining, which is the best you can do. So I understand, please, I'm not saying that's how the presentation should look like. And now, if you can move to page 10.
Okay.
You've got theoretical model consists of a set of extended finite state machines that run in parallel. Might want to talk to Jirka Kuchera, because basically that's what he's doing with me. Mm.
Okay.
Maybe one question, how is this machine controlled?
I'm not exactly sure, to be honest, but it's probably going to be related to discrete signals. So as in the later example that I've pointed out, there's the host that generate the action that's happening on the network, and this would probably fire off signals, which would then fire off what will happen with the machines.
If you remember, we were in this class, we were talking about grammar. So instead of grammars, Jirka has automata, and they talk to each other. So you might be interested in talking.
Yeah. anyone else?
If not, thank you very, very much. Nice presentation. Next time we'll talk on Monday, but I'm not sure if you are interested. It's going to be about compilers. And then in a week, right here, 12 o'clock, we'll go on talking about the conference here. So, thank you very much.
Prosím vás, jo, zkuste poupravit takhle, když jsem něco řekl a